out of the anti-white system and tune in to the pro-white system at radioarian.com.
Hello and welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Monday, the 28th of May, 2018, and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks. Well, we're going to do something a little bit different this week because I need a week off. So these programs are being pre-recorded and you'll just have me as the host. And we're going to cover early white civilizations. This is something that I've mentioned lots of times, the fact that the civilization in India was white, the civilization in Egypt was white, the civilization in Mesopotamia was white, in the Middle East it was white, and they all fell due to miscegenation. And there is lots of evidence to show this, but it's politically incorrect, so it's not really mentioned in the history books. But the actual evidence for it is overwhelming. Now, a lot of the time I get accused of just saying this because I'm an identity Christian. So we're not going to use an Identity Christian book for this. We're going to use March of the Titans by Arthur Kemp. And I'm going to read out various sections from the book and I'm going to add my comments to it as well, because I don't entirely agree with him in everything, although the general conclusion I do agree with. The main mistake that he makes is he thinks that the Jews have always been like they are today, which is a common mistake that people make. But that just isn't true. You only have to read the histories of Flavius Josephus to see that. And he describes exact times when the miscegenation occurs. And you've also got the descriptions in the Old Testament of what the Israelites were like. They were fair, they were red-haired, blue-eyed, Nordic type is what the original Israelites were like. And Arthur Kemp does admit that there was miscegenation, but he clearly thinks that this miscegenation occurred a lot earlier than where the history books actually tell us that it occurred. So there is some confusion over the term Semite. When he uses Semite, he means Arab. And yet at that time, people that were descended from Shem, the Hebrews, they weren't Arabs at that time. Arabs were Arabs. The word Arab is a Hebrew word and it means mongrel race. And quite clearly, the race that used that word to describe the Arabs could not have been a mongrel race themselves. So that's just another bit of evidence for it. Anyway, I don't really want to cover that today because I've covered that lots of times in lots of other podcasts. So what we're going to look at today is India. And I will begin with the ancient white civilization in India that was circa 2500 BC, because there was two. Oh, and one other thing. Arthur Kemp talks of white people as being European, even though these whites are all in different parts of the world. You know, white civilization in India, white civilization in Middle East, a long time before we had any white civilizations in Europe. And yet they're still called European. And this is why I like the term Aryan, because it doesn't limit white people to just being in one geographic area. The civilization that we have in Europe at the moment, that's just the latest one of our civilizations. We call ourselves European because the last of our civilizations was in Europe, but we might as well have called ourselves Indian or Egyptian or Mesopotamian, because those were all earlier civilizations that we had. So I think it's better to call ourselves Aryan, or even to call ourselves white. And I like the term Aryan because it means noble and honourable, two aspects of the white race that we should cultivate. And that's the origin of the term. It was also an ethnic term as well as a descriptive term, because it described our attitude. We were noble. We were honourable. As I say, that's what we should still strive to be today. Well, beginning with his book here, Ancient White Civilizations in India, circa 2500 BC. One of the most far-flung of the old European settlements was to be found in present-day northern India, known as the Harappan culture, after an excavated city, Harappa, in modern-day Pakistan, or the Indus Valley Civilization, is another term for it. It was unknown until 1927, when the first major excavations took place. The remains of settlements belonging to this culture have been found throughout the Indus River Valley in Pakistan, westward along the coast to the Iranian border, in India's northwestern states, as far east as New Delhi, and on the Oxus River in northern Afghanistan. So that's all areas that were originally white, Pakistan and Afghanistan. The old European, or white Mediterranean, racial makeup of the people who created the Indus River Valley Civilization has been proven by an examination of skulls and skeletal remains undertaken by Colonel R.B.S. Selwell and Dr. B.S. Guha of the Zoological Society of India, who both conclusively found that almost all were of the Mediterranean subrace. Now, in the foreword to this book, he says there are no longer any people left that are this pure Mediterranean subrace. He says that the closest people that come to it are maybe a few people in Wales. They were white, but since that time, Mediterraneans have either mixed with Nordics or they have mixed with North Africans, which is why when you go to the Mediterranean today, you see people that are white, but you also see people who are quite clearly not white. And a lot of people think that the Mediterranean racial type is this not white type. And the original Mediterranean was more like a smaller Nordic with darker features, darker hair, darker eyes, rather than the very light blonde and very light blue eyes and tall body frame that you see with the classic Nordic racial type. So the old Mediterranean was really like a smaller Nordic type, really. Continuing with the section from the book, the first old European settlement of the region was made around 2500 BC, when the white Mediterraneans probably arrived after trekking from the Tigris and Euphrates river valley. They found darker natives in the region who were easily subjected. The old European civilization lasted until the region was invaded by Indo-European Nordics around 1500 BC. The two major cities of the Indus Valley civilization were Mohenjo-Daro in the Lower Sindh and Harappa in the Punjab. In many respects, the cities of the old European Indus Valley civilization were almost identical to that of other old European civilizations, particularly that of Knossos on Crete. Even the layout of the cities with their huge square buildings was identical. The major site in the region of Mohenjo-Daro is the city of Mohenjo-Daro. The remains of this citadel, excavated between 1927 and 1930, bear a striking physical resemblance to the old European settlements in early Mesopotamia and Crete. At its peak, Mohenjo-Daro must have had over 40,000 inhabitants, a substantial amount for the time. It must have required a lot of farming and a lot of infrastructure to get the food into the city as well, which is something that you don't see with non-advanced races. Continuing. The city was based on an advanced grid plan layout with streets running in very clearly arranged city blocks. One of the most astonishing aspects of the city was the sewage system. The people of Mohenjo-Daro developed both public and private hygiene to a degree unmatched in many parts of the modern world. To a degree unmatched by the modern Indian world, where, as we know, they defecate on the streets. See, this is one of the big differences between the white race and the rest of the world. The rest of the world behaves like the birds and the beasts, and the white race has always had sewage systems to get rid of our waste. We've always been hygienic. Continuing, each house, large or small, was provided with earthenware pipe fitted crossways into the walls, which opened into a small individual gutter. This, in turn, joined central covered sewers. At intervals, there were decantation ditches where the main sewers joined. These were designed to collect the heaviest waste, so that it would not obstruct the mains. The houses also had baths, another innovation for the time, and the water for this purpose was supplied from the many wells throughout the city. All the Indus River Valley civilization towns had great building works and an orderly administration built upon an agricultural economy. Many of the houses were built on mud brick platforms that protected the buildings from seasonal floods, and multiple-story dwellings were common. Other structures included large buildings that may have been used for storing grain for private or government use. The old European inhabitants of the Indus River Valley also developed pictographic writing. A large number of clay seals bearing this language have been recovered, but sadly, they have never been deciphered. Now, L.A. Waddell believes that he actually deciphered them. He believes they show a link with Sumerian writing and also runic writing. Some of his work is pretty interesting. It's worth reading, L.A. Waddell, anyway, even if a lot of what he was working on he actually got wrong. Now, we've got some pictures here, and we can see that that it's quite clearly a Nordic skulled male, because this is one of the ways that we can tell that these people were white, because they actually made images of themselves. And this is a bust, and a bust of one of these Mohenjo-Daro inhabitants. And the comment underneath it, it says, "A bust recovered from Mohenjo-Daro shows the racial type of the inhabitants of this civilization, which extended north to the borders of modern Afghanistan. These white Mediterraneans were absorbed into two sets of outsiders, non-white, dark-skinned locals, and Indo-Aryan invaders, who entered the region around 1500 BC. A study of the racial composition of the inhabitants of this region, taken from grave sites, confirms the great mix of racial types and the ultimate vanishing of the original old Europeans into this new mixed population." And at the time when you had that mixed population, you also had the strict caste laws, so the whites remained white and these non-whites were the servant class. Continuing, "It is often suggested that the drying up of a major river in North India, the Hakra River, was the cause of the collapse of the Indus River Valley civilization. This is not the likely cause of the collapse of the entire culture, as it was spread out further than just around one river. The real reason for the disappearance of the people of the Indus River Valley is much simpler. Like all of the old European civilizations, the Indus Valley Harappans were overwhelmed and integrated into other peoples, whether dark natives or the new white invaders, the Indo-European Aryans. In this way, all the original white Mediterranean civilizations, from Western Europe right through to northern India, were all but wiped out through racial assimilation." And we're going to go and have a look at the Indo-European Aryans next. Now, the Indo-Aryans, or Indo-Europeans, appear to have spread out from around about the Black Sea area, and they spread west as far as Britain, they said east into China, and they also spread south into Sumeria. And when they went into the Indian area, they became known as, well, we class them today as the Indo-Aryans. At around 2000 BC, this is quoting from the book again, around 2000 BC, a sun-worshipping Indo-European tribe, calling themselves Aryans, invaded Central Asia and occupied territory as far as the north of India. These invaders, who used the Sanskrit written language, were what became known as the original Aryans. Far-off distant racial cousins of the Aryans went west, penetrating as far as Ireland, giving the name Aera to that land, also a derivative of the word Aryan. And they also called themselves the Bharats. And you hear the Eastern Bharats and the Western Bharats, and the book, the Mahabharata. And the word Bharat itself is pretty much identical to Brit. That's another piece of research by L.A. Waddell. After 2000 BC, waves of Aryans flooded into present-day Afghanistan, setting up a nation which became known as Aryana, or Land of the Aryans. By the middle of the 6th century BC, the Persian Empire had incorporated Aryana into its boundaries. Of course, Persian Empire was also white. And by 330 BC, Alexander the Great had occupied the region. By this time, most of the original Aryans in Aryana had been absorbed into the local native population, although it is still possible to this day to see light-eyed and light-haired individuals among the present-day Afghanistan population. During the 1st century AD, the Kushans, an Asiatic race, occupied Aryana, destroying the last vestiges of the original Indo-Aryan culture and race. Thereafter, Aryana fell under the rule of a large number of different non-white races until the 7th century AD, when Arab Muslim armies occupied the region. In 1220, the region was once again overrun by Mongols under Genghis Khan, who devastated the land. By this time, the people of Aryana had passed into history, and only that country's name is remembered today. Another branch of the Aryans penetrated as far east as India, where they also settled and built a civilization. Although the Aryans established a powerful white civilization in northern India, it would be incorrect to think that the native Indians had not created anything of their own. Mixed with the original white Mediterraneans, the Indus civilization, created by the Harappans, was already in existence by the time the Aryans invaded. The invading Aryans were more advanced and referred to the conquered Indians as Dasya, the Dark Ones, or slaves. Indo-Aryan poetry, the Rig Veda, is full of stories of war against the Dasya and reflects the stark racial divisions between the conquering Aryans and the conquered Indians. The Rig Veda, the original holy book of the Aryan conquerors of India, contains a great many references to the race of the conquerors and the conquered. According to this book, the leader of the Aryan invasion was one Indra, and his role in slaying the Dasyas, the Negroids in India, is a prominent theme. Thou, Indra, art the destroyer of all the cities, the slayer of the Dasyas, the prosperer of man, the lord of the sky. It goes on to use the word black in a number of instances to describe the Dasya. Indra, the slayer of Ritra, the destroyer of cities, has scattered the Dasya, sprang from a black womb. The Rig Veda praises the god who destroyed the Dasyans and protected the Aryan colour. It then goes on to thank the god who bestowed on his white friends the fields, bestowed the sun, bestowed the waters. Black skin is repeatedly referred to with abhorrence. Starting with a description of the black skin, Krishnum Vacham, in the Rig Veda, it is said that stormy gods who rush on like furious bulls and scatter the black skin. And it claims that the black skin, the hated of Indra, will be swept out of heaven. It also tells how the black skin was conquered. Indra protected in battle the Aryan worshipper. He subdued the lawless for Manu. He conquered the black skin. The Rig Veda thanks God for scattering the slave bands of black descent and for stamping out the vile Dasyan colour. It also contains this choice remark, which sums up the Aryans' opinion of their non-white subjects. Black skin is impious. Other extracts from the Rig Veda further illustrate the sharp racial divisions in this time. Indra in battle helps his Aryan worshipper, he who hath 100 helps at hand in every fray, in frays that win the light of heaven, plaguing the lawless, he gave up to Manu's seed the dusky skin, blazing, t'where he burns each covetous man away, he burns the tyrannous away. More from Indra in the Rig Veda here. Thou to the son of Vidathan Rijasvan gave us up mighty Murgaya and Pipru. Thou smotest down the swarthy 50,000 and rentest forts as an age consumes a garment. More from Indra. One car wheel of the sun thou rollest forward, and one thou settest free to move for Kutsa. Thou slewest noseless Dazyas with thy weapon, and in their home overthrewest hostile speakers. Noseless Dazyas would suggest a reference to flat-nosed negroid types. And from the Soma Parvamana, active and bright have they come forth, impetuous in speed like bulls, driving the black skin far away. And we have a couple of pictures here. We have a Hindu goddess, and it says, from a Hindu temple in India. In Hindu mythology, the white goddess Durga slays the negroid demon Mahishasura. In Hindu mythology, most of the gods have white skin and European-like features, while the demons are distinctly negroid. The Hindu holy book, the Rig Veda, is very graphic in its description of racial conflict. And I'll point out that you don't just need to have white skin to be able to tell that these gods are white, especially not in Egypt. In Egypt, they have gods that are green-skinned, but you can tell from the skull shape and the features and proportions that they're white. And the same with any blue-skinned ones that we find in India. There's another picture here titled Nordic Remnants in Modern Afghanistan. Aryan survivors in modern Iran. Two children from a northwestern village of Iran. Afghan children in a refugee centre. And it says, note the blonde child compared to the other children, some of whom show distinctly Asiatic racial traits. And of course, we remember the Yazidi that ISIS were enslaving and raping. And many of them had blonde hair and blue or green eyes. And you could see that, you know, these families would have one blonde looking child and the rest would all be dark skinned, which shows you that's a throwback to the time when the area was full of white people. We've got some more quotes here. We've got these Soma Parvamana. Oh, a sire and mother, they have roared in unison, bright with a verse of praise, burning up rightless men, blowing away with supernatural might from the earth and from the heavens the swarthy skin which Indra hates. More here from the Rig Veda, describing Aryan gods as blondes. With him too is this rain of his that comes like herds. Indra throws drops of moisture on his yellow beard. When the sweet juice is shed, he seeks the pleasant place and stirs the worshipper as wind disturbs the wood. At the swift draught, the Soma drinker waxed in might, the iron one with yellow beard and yellow hair. He, lord of tawny coursers, lord of fleet-foot mares, will bear his bay steed safely over all distress. O lord of all men, fair of cheek, rejoice thee in the gladdening lords present at these drink offerings. In what could easily be another indicator of the common cultural origins between the Rig Veda and the Indo-European gods, Indra's greatest weapon is said in the Hindu holy book to be a lightning bolt, identical to the weapon of Thor, the northern European god. Well, that's also the same as with Yahweh. It was a lightning bolt that would come down to light the sacrifices. And Christ is also on a white horse in Revelation, the same as Indra's on a white horse. Another Indra's symbol was the cloud. And of course, the Israelites followed the cloud. God took the form of a cloud for them to follow when they were in their Exodus. And another of Indra's symbols is the rainbow. And of course, again, you have the rainbow of Yahweh in the Old Testament. I'll just point those out to point out links between white races. I mean, the author here is pointing out a link between Indra and the European gods like Thor. And I'm just pointing out a link with the Middle Eastern gods from that time. More quotes here from Indra. He, much invoked, hath slain Dazyas and Simyas after his wont and laid them low with arrows. The mighty Thunderer, with his fair complexioned friends, won the land. And also, Yahweh was known for thunder and lightning. around the mountain where Moses was. And he also brought rain after a long drought. Sing with oblation, praise to him who maketh glad, who with ridges fan drove the dusky brood away. Feign for help, him the strong whose right hand wields the bolt, him girt by Maroots we invoke to be our friend. Armed with his bolt and trusting in his prowess, he wandered, shattering the forts of Dazyas. Cast thy dart, knowing, thunderer, at the Dazyar. Increase the area's might and glory, Indra, for him who hath thus taught these human races. Magavan, bearing a fame-worthy title, thunderer, drawing nigh to slay the Dazyars, hath given himself the name of Sun for glory. At the time of the writing of the Rig Veda, a clear distinction was drawn between the two types of people in the Indus River Valley, the fair, conquering immigrants, and the dark, native people. Within 300 years, however, physical mixing had proceeded to the point where these two racial classes had been subdivided further. Membership in each class was determined solely by the colour of an individual's skin. This came to be known as the caste system. The word caste was the term given by Portuguese travellers many centuries later from the Latin word castus, meaning pure. The original Sanskrit for the caste system was varna, which means colour. As assimilation and integration between the Aryans and the Dazyar increased, the caste system became more and more complex till four major divisions were created, with membership in each group dependent upon the colouring of the individual. This four-tier system still exists in India today, with the highest caste, the Brahmins, or priests, being the lightest in colour, and the Sudras, or untouchables, being the darkest. Within a few hundred years, the original Aryans had become so assimilated that their contribution to Indian civilization can be considered to have ended. Their legacy lives on in the language, religion and poetry of India, and the caste system. Blue or grey eyes can, however, still be found in the Indian upper classes, which tend to be concentrated in the northern parts of that country, where the original Aryan settlement took place. Many of these lighter-coloured Indians become successful actors and actresses in India's film industry, which is nicknamed Bollywood. In accordance with the caste system, the more European-looking the actors, the more successful they tend to be. Genetic studies conducted in India have confirmed the Indo-European invasion and the considerable genetic gap between the castes. And before he ends his section on India, he also has a short piece about the history and uses of the swastika. The swastika was a letter of the ancient Indo-European Sanskrit language, and originally was a symbol of the sun, meaning well-being. This emblem was carried by Celts, Germans, and Slavs throughout their wanderings, and became the Celtic cross. It was incorporated into the Indo-Aryan religion, and then transported to the Hindu religion, as an enduring symbol of the Indo-European peoples, wherever they went. The swastika is found in all the lands where these people settled. And then he has some examples from India, from Greece, from Rome, the Isle of Man, from the Viking era. And we also have it in Saxon times. You can see it on Anglo-Saxon crosses in Britain. And just before we finish with Arthur Kemp's pieces on India, and the appendix at the back, he has some more genetic evidence for the Aryan invasion of India. And this is from the San Francisco Chronicle, May 26, 1999. Analyses of the male Y chromosome, plus genes hidden in small cellular bodies called mitochondria, show that today's genetic patterns agree with the accounts of ancient Indo-European warriors conquering the Indian subcontinent. The invaders apparently shoved the local men aside, took their women, and set up the rigid caste system that exists today. Their descendants are still the elite within Hindu society, Thus, today's genetic patterns, the researchers explained, vividly reflect a historic event, or events, that occurred 3,000 or 4,000 years ago. The gene patterns are consistent with a historical scenario in which invading Caucasoids, primarily males, established the caste system and occupied the highest positions, placing the indigenous population, who were more similar to Asians, in lower caste positions. The data implies, then, that there was a group of males with European affinities who were largely responsible for this invasion, 3,000 or 4,000 years ago, said geneticist Lynn Jord of the University of Utah. Further, when we look at the different components within the upper caste, the group with the greatest European similarity of all is the warrior caste, the Kshatriya, who are still at the top of the Hindu castes, along with the Brahmins, Geordie said. So we can see that there is plenty of evidence that India started out white. And there were also further migrations there later on when Buddhism appeared there. It was white people that brought that there. And they had universities there. There's a huge universities that can be looked up on Wikipedia that were there about 2,000 years ago. So it wasn't the end of white people. They still continued for a longer time in the upper castes, but the mixing eventually took over. And then later on, the final death blow was given to India when the Muslims invaded. And ever since that time, you cannot class any of the people there as being white. It's a non-white country. And the reason why the civilization fell and they are now pooping in the streets is because of miscegenation. So that's the first lesson of this week is India. And tomorrow we will have a look at China. Thank you very much for listening. God bless and hail victory.